Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Adventure coming up in this hour. Later on, a broadcast of Suspense from 1956. But right now, Eric Ambler's famous story, Journey into Fear, adapted on Escape. This first turned on CBS on November 19th, 1950.
You, finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you Escape.
Escape with us now to Istanbul, the nerve center of Balkan intrigue and violence, and the story of a man caught in the fatal web of the most cold-blooded political organization on Earth, as Eric Ambler tells it in his famous tale, Journey into Fear.
Bonsoir,
monsieur.
Bonsoir.
It seemed as if a bar of white-hot metal had been suddenly pressed against my hand. And then it was numb. But I could feel the blood beginning to trickle through my fingers. There wasn't a sound. And as I crouched against the wall, I became dimly aware that the window was open and that someone was moving by it. And then my eyes, becoming used to the darkness, saw that whoever had been at the window had left by it. I reached for the light switch and found it. The hand hurt like the very devil.
Yes?
Is that you, Kopeikin?
Yes, what is it? I have only this moment come in. Where are you?
I'm in my hotel room. Listen, something rather stupid has happened there. There was a burglar up here. He took pot shots at me as I came in, and one of them hit me in the hand.
Are you badly hurt?
No, but it gave me a nasty shock.
Have the police been notified?
No, not yet.
Good. Leave the matter to me. I will speak to a friend of mine about it. He is connected to the police and with great influence. As soon as I am finished, I shall come over.
Well, there's no need for that.
Excuse me, my dear fellow. There is ever a need. You must stay in your room until I arrive.
Well, I had no intention of going out. Well, if you must come over, Kopeikin, please hurry. I want to get some sleep tonight.
Does it occur to you that this man was shooting to kill you and that he came here for no other purpose?
Oh, that's nonsense. The man was a thief. Why should anyone wish to kill me? I'm the most harmless man alive.
Are you? Remember I told you that I was going to telephone a friend of mine?
Yes.
We are going to see him at once.
Oh, well, I'm jolly well not. I'm tired. I want to go to bed.
Unfortunately, I have official instructions. A man tried to murder you tonight. Something must be done about it at once.
Murder? Are you out of your mind?
I am sorry, my dear fellow. I can understand your feelings. But this friend of mine is Colonel Haki. He's the head of the Turkish secret police.
Oh, now look here, Kopeikin. What's this all about? I thought you were my company's Turkish representative. Now you talk about secret service and all that rubbish.
Please, I cannot tell you anything more. It is to our mutual interest that we go at once to Colonel Haki. You must believe me.
All this hysteria of absolutely nothing.
My dear fellow, it is most certainly not nothing. Get your overcoat. It's cold out.
You must realize, Mr. Graham, that an attempt was made to kill you tonight.
Well, now, I don't see that at all. I mean, I disturbed a thief at his work. He fired at me and escaped.
A thief? Unfortunately, no. I have a duty to do, Mr. Graham. It is to protect you.
Protect me? From what?
You are in the employ of Vessels Keter and Bliss Limited, the English armament manufacturers.
Yes.
You are, I believe, Mr. Graham, a naval ordnance expert.
I'm an engineer, and naval ordnance happens to be my subject.
Exactly. And your firm has contracted to do some work for my government. Certain new guns and torpedoes to rearm our naval vessels.
Well, that's true.
It is also true that our government stipulated that the work should be completed before spring.
Yes?
Exactly. Due to the international situation, we must have the equipment in our dockyards by that time. Let us suppose, then, that your thief had not merely grazed a hand, but had killed you.
Well, naturally, my company would send another man out.
Which would take time, Mr. Graham? Unless, of course, there exist sketches, drawings, and all that they need to know about our ships.
Oh. No. I mean, I was forbidden to put certain things on paper.
Ah. Then, if you were to die, it would take a great deal of time for another man to accomplish what you have already done, no? And when spring comes, our navy's strength is still precisely what it is now. Do you know, Mr. Graham, that our enemies will do anything to see that it is so? Anything, Mr. Graham. Do you understand?
Oh.
Quite so. I have here, Mr. Graham, a photograph of a man. I am aware you did not catch a glimpse of the assassin's face, but I want you to cast your mind back over the time you have been in Turkey and tell me if you have ever seen him before.
All right. Hello. Yes.
You are sure?
Positive. Have a look, Kopeikin. He was at the cabaret you took me to tonight. I remember him at the bar.
Yes, he was there.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Banat, Romanian. A hired murderer. We know him well. His price ranges from 50,000 francs upward. His employer is a man named Voroshin, who in turn is hired by his country to eliminate you. Unfortunately, we possess no photograph of him.
I begin to understand.
Of course you do. Now, we face the problem. You must return to England safely. But how? The train is out of the question. You wouldn't live for an hour. The aeroplane. Unfortunately, the weather here has disrupted service.
There is the Sestri Levante sailing for Athens tomorrow afternoon. It is a small boat.
Mm-hmm. And we can see that your enemies do not board her. From Athens, you can take the plane to England.
Well, I don't know, Colonel. In view of what you've told me, perhaps I should get in touch with the British Embassy here.
And what do you expect them to do? Send you home in a cruiser? No, no, my dear Mr. Graham. This is a question of time. Leaving tomorrow afternoon will land you in Athens the day after. That is how it is to be.
Well, I seem to have no choice in the matter.
I am happy to see that you are cooperative. Return to your hotel, Mr. Graham. We shall see you safely aboard tomorrow.
The next afternoon, Kopeikin and Colonel Haki saw me aboard. As a bon voyage gift, they presented me with a bottle of Johnny Walker and a small pistol, both of which I put in my suitcase. Besides myself, there were four other passengers, all of whom Colonel Haki assured me were harmless. The gangway went down. I felt the ship sway gently, and the journey had begun. My companions were an odd assortment of continental travelers. There were the Matis, who occupied the cabin next to mine, a middle-aged French couple who argued incessantly. Their voices penetrated the thin wooden bulkhead with dismaying ease.
The sheets are damp?
No, no, it is simply that they are cold. It does not matter.
You think not. You may sleep as you wish, but do not complain to me about your kidneys.
Cold sheets do not harm the kidneys, Sherry.
We have paid for our tickets. We are entitled.
Then there was a Mr. Cuvetli, whom I learned at the dinner table was a dealer in tobacco. A short, heavy man with a smile fixed like that of a ventriloquist doll.
I go to England. Trade in tobacco is very good. England buys much tobacco from Turkey, you know. With American dollars so expensive and possibility of war, it is good business, Mr. Mati.
So, I arrange a good deal of transportation for tobacco companies. Ah. What company do you represent?
Passar of Istanbul.
Passar?
I must say these ravioli are exquisite.
The last passenger was a thick, round-shouldered man with a pale face and prominent blue eyes. He introduced himself over a brandy in the lounge.
My name is Haller, Dr. Fritz Haller. I'm a German, a West German, and I am on my way back to my country.
Oh, have you been long in Turkey?
A few weeks. I came there from Persia.
Ah, your oil business, hmm?
No, Mr. Kirby. Archaeology.
Oh. Now, how interesting. Those were my fellow passengers. At 9 o'clock that night, the cutter came out from Kanakale to take off the pilot, and with it came a telegram. It was from Kopekin in Istanbul, and it read, H requests me to inform you that Banat left for Sofia on train. All well. Safe journey to England. Best wishes. I thought of the pistol in my cabin, and I laughed to myself. It was an Aegean day, intensely colored in the sun, with small pink clouds drifting in a bleached indigo sea. I lazed in my bunk. I had coffee sent in. And later, I was standing by the rail talking to the little Frenchman.
Beautiful, beautiful. Oh, my wife has no appreciation for delights such as these.
Oh, what a shame.
My wife, you mean? Oh, well, one cannot have everything. She is a wonderful cook.
How fortunate.
Yes. Oh, by the way, have you met our new passenger?
New passenger?
Yes, didn't you know? We stopped at the island of Lemnos during the night. He came aboard then. A Greek, I think.
I hardly heard what he said.
Not very sociable.
Because at that moment from the lounge stepped a man. Beneath the high crowned soft felt hat with the pale, doughy features of a face I had seen before. A face in a photograph. A photograph that Colonel Hockey had shown me. It was the man who had tried to kill me. The Romanian, Banat. I heard Mati's voice as though from a long way off.
Monsieur, do you not feel well?
Then I turned, and without
Monsieur!
Looking at the man who had just come on deck, I went below. Somehow, Banat must have learned that I was on the Sestri Levante. He had taken the train for Sofia, and then as soon as it had crossed the Greek border, left it. It was a simple thing to fly from there to Lemnos. I thought of the telegram. All well. Those idiots. And now I was caught. Banat wouldn't miss twice. He was a professional murderer. I had to get help. And so I went to the purser's office. He was a precise little man who smiled when I talked to him. Look, I found out there is a man on this ship who is here for the express purpose of murdering me.
Indeed? And what is his name?
Banat. B-A-N-A-T. He's a Romanian.
One moment, sir.
And now look here, you don't suppose he'd give his real name, do you?
Banat, no. There is no one of that name or nationality aboard.
He got on during the night at Lemnos.
Oh, there is Mr. Mavrodopoulos. He's a Greek businessman.
That may be what his passport says. His real name is Banat and he's a Romanian.
Have you proof of that?
Have I proof? Now look, if you'll just radio Colonel Haki of the Turkish police at Istanbul, he'll confirm what I say.
As I say, sir, we do not have radio for that purpose. I suggest that you leave the matter until we reach Athens.
But can't you understand that man intends to kill me?
No, sir, I do not understand. Nobody on this ship is going to murder you. There are too many people about.
Oh.
You have had bad dreams. It is ridiculous.
I want to see the captain.
I am extremely busy, sir. If you will close the door as you leave.
I was almost sick with fear and anger as I left, and I went back to my cabin. Well, I could still go to the captain, but I could well imagine his reaction to my story. There was no proof, and these people were loath to stir up international complications. No. I was alone with my murderer somewhere on the ship with me. And then I remembered the revolver Kopekin had given me. I'd never handled a gun before, but at least it would give me a chance. It was something. I went to my suitcase and I opened it. Well, it must be. I put it in myself just before I got on board. It had to be there. There was nothing. Someone had been in my cabin and had taken the gun.
Mr. Graham, we were all worried about you.
I told them that you had the sickness. Too much sea.
Oh, vite toi.
Oui, ma chère.
Well, I'm sorry. I had rather a bad headache.
I hope that it is nothing serious.
No, thank you, Mr. Haller.
Have you met Mr. Mavrodopoulos?
No. I haven't had the pleasure.
This is our English friend, Mr. Graham.
How do you do?
Nice.
The soup is nauseating, Monsieur Graham. I suggest that you do not partake of it. When this
moment... Must you keep on?
Sorry, my dear.
Tell me, Monsieur Mavrodopoulos, are you bound for Athens, or do we enjoy your company as far as Genoa?
I go to Athens. Then perhaps I continue on. Or perhaps not.
A difficult decision, eh, Mr. Mavrodopoulos?
Yes. And notice your hand, monsieur. This bandage. An accident?
Nothing serious. A bullet wound, to be exact. Some dirty little thief took a shot at me in Istanbul.
Dirty little thief, huh? You must look after yourself carefully. You must be ready to shoot back next time.
Oh, I shall. There's not the slightest doubt of that.
To carry a pistol, huh?
Naturally.
That is good. One must be so careful. You should be very careful.
I don't think it's necessary. That sort of scum doesn't risk his skin with an armed man. The grin that had been on the Romanian's face faded. He hadn't liked that. And then I thought of something. Banat had taken my gun. It must be somewhere in his cabin. If I could slip away for 5 minutes, there was still a chance. As soon as the luncheon ended, I excused myself and I wandered off. I could see Banat engaged in conversation with Mati, and I prayed that it would be a long one. Banat's cabin was strangely bare. A gray raincoat hung with a soft hat behind the door, and a battered suitcase was under the lower berth. But the gun was nowhere to be found, nor was it anywhere in the cabin. I went to my quarters feeling helpless and needing a drink to steady my nerves.
I have been waiting for you, Mr. Graham.
Mr. Haller.
I rather think that you have been looking for something. A gun, possibly. Would this be it?
Well, I don't understand how you...
No, Mr. Graham. Please, don't come any closer. I came to have a little talk with you. Sit down. You know, Mr. Graham, poor Mavrodopoulos, or should I say Banat, is quite upset as I am. You have caused us a great deal of trouble and money.
I wonder if your name happens to be Voroshin and not Haller.
Oh, dear me, I had no idea that you are so well informed. Colonel Harkin must have been in a very talkative mood. And did he know I was in Istanbul?
I don't think so.
I thought not. You see, in order to take care of you, I had to take a hand myself. Banat was extremely careless at your hotel. When I found yesterday morning that you were to leave on this boat, I had to move very quickly. Luckily, there was a man named Haller who had booked passage with his assistant 3 days ago. Therefore, I took over his ticket and passport. Poor unfortunate. But it would have been awkward to book passage at the last minute without attracting Colonel Harker's attention.
Yes, I imagine it would. Well, now, supposing you come to the point.
Certainly. It must be clear to you that we cannot allow you to return to England. The obvious method of ridding ourselves of your presence is to shoot you the moment you land. But that could become complicated.
It could.
The other alternative is to induce you to take a holiday for 6 weeks or more.
In other words, you hold up my return to England so that my company's work would be delayed to the point of uselessness for the Turkish government.
You have a keen mind, Mr. Graham. Tonight, we reach Athens. If you like the idea, you will live to see your England again.
And if I refuse to take this holiday?
Then things will be complicated, will they not?
I think you're bluffing. Hasn't it occurred to you that I shall repeat this conversation to the captain?
It has occurred to me. As a matter of fact, the purser was telling me about your little talk with him this morning. I'm afraid that the ship's officers, including the captain, have enjoyed the joke very much. They call you the Mad Englishman and laugh. Well, Mr. Graham, Which is it to be?
If I take this holiday, where will it be?
In a charming villa near Athens. You will enjoy all the comforts of home, I assure you. I shall give you an hour to think about it. Remember, we are not at war, Mr. Graham. You are not a soldier. In reality, you are doing your country no disservice. No one will ever know.
He left me alone. It was not a pleasant choice he had given me. I knew that Banat and he could keep their promise to kill me when I landed. And I was equally sure that the holiday Voroshin spoke of would be a very long one. That either way, I should never return to my wife or to England. And I sat for half an hour smoking and trying to think. And then I remembered. Mati.
Yes? Oh, Monsieur Graham.
May I speak to you for a moment?
But of course.
What is it?
Monsieur Graham, ma chère.
Would you come into my cabin?
Certainly. I shall be back in a moment, my dear.
I need your help.
I thought that you looked serious. Is it money?
No. No, I want you to take a message for me when we dock at Athens.
A message?
Monsieur Mati, you are the only man aboard I feel that I can trust.
I am honored.
Listen, I'm employed by a British armor manufacturer. I'm working in joint service with the British and Turkish governments.
No.
When I get off the ship tonight, an attempt will be made to kill me.
This is true?
Yes, I'm afraid it is. What I want you to do is to go to the Turkish consulate in Athens and give him a message for me. Will you do that?
I will do it.
You realize the message is highly confidential.
I will say nothing.
Thank you. All right, then, this is it. Inform Colonel Haki, Istanbul, that Graham is forced to accompany Soviet agents Voroshin and Banat, traveling with passports of Halle and Mavropoulos.
Is it possible?
Unfortunately, it is.
Well, go on.
In the event of my death, please inform the British consul that these men are responsible.
Mon Dieu, so that is why you looked sick when I spoke of Mavropoulos this morning. Well, why do we not together shoot down the filthy swine? I have my revolver.
You have a gun? Here?
But yes, when one travels...
Well, then there is something else you can do for me.
Huh?
Let me buy your revolver.
I will not sell it to you. I give it to you. Here. Oh,
thank you.
But let me help you.
No. This is splendid. Oh, I am grateful, Monsieur Mati. And you will take the message?
It is understood. Have no fear.
Half an hour later, I told Voroshin that I would agree to his plan. I'm sure that he didn't believe me. But nor did he know that I was armed. It was a forlorn hope. But if I was going to die, I would have the satisfaction of knowing that others would die with me. 8 o'clock, the Sestri Levanti was approaching her berth. I had agreed to pass through customs and to meet Voroshin on the street. As I stood at the rail watching the quay drawing closer, I saw Banat standing to one side, hand in pocket and a fat smile on his face. He knew that he was going to earn his fee tonight. Voroshin stepped off the ship first, turned, waved cheerily to me. Banat followed him, and they both disappeared into the customs shed. I walked slowly down the gangway. Mr. Kuvetli came pushing after me.
Mr. Graham, please.
Yes, what is it?
Colonel Haki would be very angry with me if I allowed you out of my sight.
Haki?
I wanted to tell you before on deck, but Banat was watching. I did not dare to say anything earlier. Your face gives away too much, Mr. Graham.
You... Kuvvetli, you're a Turkish agent? One of Haki's men?
Yes. I nearly gave the game away when I spoke of my non-existent tobacco firm. I thought you would know when the Frenchman questioned me. Colonel Haki wanted to be sure that you caught your plane safely. That is why I was aboard.
But what can we do?
Together, we go through customs, and then we shall see.
Customs inspection, as ever on the continent, was slow. Although I found myself wishing that it would never end, but it did. And if Kuvvetli had a plan, he evidently didn't feel it worth mentioning. He smiled at everyone. The plump little businessman who, to all appearances, would deal in ladies' finery rather than international intrigue. We found ourselves, suitcases in hand, walking toward the street.
So that is over. I find this inspection so tedious.
Now look here, Kuvvetli. I'm extremely grateful for your presence, but what are we going to do? Voroshin and Banat are waiting out there with a car. They're waiting for me.
I know. It has all been arranged.
What do you mean, that we walk through those doors and do nothing?
Absolutely nothing. You'll see.
Well, I hope you have a gun.
I have.
Good. So have I.
Oh?
Yes, thanks to the Frenchman. There they are. Do we run for it?
Go on walking, Mr. Graham. Keep your hand away from your pocket. That's it.
Are you mad? They'll kill us.
You, Mr. Graham, not me. Go on. Under my overcoat is a gun. Please do not make trouble.
Go on. Oh, what a blithering idiot. You're one of them, too.
We're ready, Voroshin.
You've taken long enough.
Hurry up.
He's got a gun, Voroshin. Left hand pocket.
Get in, Mr. Graham.
Look out!
I remember a perfect fusillade of shots, and then something cracked me on the skull, and I was falling. It was all very dark and comfortable.
Mr. Graham. Mr. Graham.
He is all right. Mr. Graham, this Kopeckin and Colonel Hackey, you are safe.
Oh, good show.
You have been unconscious.
Really?
Huh? You are at the airport now. You see, we found the bodies of two men in Ankara. They were archaeologists, Halar and his assistant. I realized that Voroshin and one of his men must have boarded the ship using their passports.
Yes, I found that out.
We flew a government plane here, Kopeckin and I, to wait for you. The Greek authorities were kind enough to assist.
Yes, sir. Very, very kind.
Not at all.
And now, my dear fellow, the plane is waiting to take you to England. We'll see you safely aboard.
Yes. I say, what about Banat and Voroshin and Kubetli?
Oh, yes. It was rather unfortunate. After you fell, they tried to get away in the car. Someone hit a tire. There was a smash-up. The petrol tank exploded. A tragedy.
Oh, yes. Well, it's very decent of you.
My dear fellow, it has been a pleasure. Come along. We will help you to your plane. I am sure you're anxious to get home to England and your wife. Come along.
Under the direction of Norman MacDonald, Escape has brought you Journey into Fear by Eric Embler, especially adapted for Escape by Anthony Ellis.
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 19, 1950, on CBS, an adaptation of Eric Ambler's story, Journey into Fear. It was actually turned into a motion picture after the novel was released in 1943, starring many players of the Mercury Theater, originally headed up by Orson Welles, including Joseph Cotten, Ruth Warwick, Everett Sloan, and Agnes Moorehead, known on radio as the First Lady of Suspense. You are listening to An Hour of Adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now Suspense is on the air. From October 9, 1956 on CBS, a season cast from CBS's Radio Row star in the story, The Digger.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you a transcribed story of a man caught in a mineshaft, trapped by his own conscience. So now, starring Torrin Thatcher, here is tonight's suspense play, The Digger.
Carton was not a tall man, not over 5'7", but the attitude of determination he had acquired the day before, when he had unexpectedly sighted his quarry, seemed to have added at least a foot to his stature. As a result, he walked through the dirty, narrow streets of the native section that morning without incident. No one blocked his path. No one cursed as he passed by. When he had walked approximately 6 blocks from the river crossing where he had had to park his car, he turned into a small open doorway.
Adio, Bona.
This is the place they call Winky's, boy.
Adio, Bona.
Where's your head man?
Thank you, Ngobe. Sir, you do not wish to drink here. There are many places better for gentlemen across the river.
I didn't come here to drink.
What other reason could you have for honoring my establishment, sir?
Well, I'm told you rent rooms upstairs.
You're a policeman, sir?
No.
Sir, you have been misinformed. Now, please, you go, huh?
Then you don't have rooms here.
Only two, sir. Where my family and close friends may rest. So you
will... I suppose he could be a close friend of yours by now.
Who, sir?
Well, the man I'm looking for. I got a job for him.
No one here seek work, sir.
Let him tell me.
But I am telling you, sir.
Now, look. Yesterday afternoon, I caught a glimpse of him in the marketplace, and since then, I've spent quite a bit of money to learn that he's staying here. He's tall, has a bad leg.
Are you willing to spend more money, sir?
I am.
You sit down, sir. Rest yourself. Ngobe.
Yes, mister.
You will see if anyone know the man this gentleman seeks. What is his name, sir?
Fabian. Roger Fabian. They used to call him the Digger.
Upstairs in the small, musty room almost directly over Carton's head, Fabian sat on the edge of a narrow cot. He had aged in the past 2 years. His stomach had soured, and he had grown thin, so that now he scarcely resembled the man once known as the Digger. For several weeks, he had heard that someone was asking questions about him, trying to track him down. And several weeks ago, if he could have paid Winky what he owed, he would have left this place and gone north. But he never seemed to have enough money, so now he waited, knowing the man would find him, wondering what the man wanted. Near Fabian, standing at the window combing her hair, was a woman about 20. She turned toward the door when Ngobe knocked.
Yes? Who is there?
Ngobe.
What do you want?
Mr. Say Bwana come. Man here to see him.
Tell him I'll be... No, tell him to come up here.
Dear Bwana.
Well, what's the matter with you?
You will have to go away.
Now, where'd you get an idea like that?
You do not eat. And at night when you are sleeping, you cry out.
Oh, and that means I'll be leaving you, eh?
You have been hiding. What you were hiding from has found you. Now he'd take you away.
Good thing you don't make your money telling fortunes. We'd starve. Carton. What are you doing here?
Hello, Digger.
Come in, come in. Yeah, you sit here where it's clean. I'll squat on the floor. Tisha, get us a drink. Say, what would you like, Carton?
Oh, nothing for me, thanks. Still a bit early.
You sure?
Yes, quite.
Well, if you won't mind, I... Hurry it up, Tisha.
You like a cigarette?
Oh, very much, thank you. Here, I have a light.
You're hard to find, Digger.
Oh, so you're the one that's been looking for me, eh? I'd heard someone was.
Mm-hmm. Been a long time, hasn't it?
Mm, 2 years. 2 years, 7 weeks.
You haven't forgotten.
Could you have?
Well, I don't know. It depends on what really happened down there.
I told the Court of Inquiry what really happened.
Yes, of course you did. How long have you been living here?
Long enough.
I suppose you know how it looks.
You know how it feels.
Oh, I'm sorry, old chap. I didn't mean to...
You think I live here by choice? I couldn't get a job after I left the mine. Not a job anywhere. I tried for over a year before I gave up.
I'm sorry.
Yes, everybody's sorry, including me. Poor old Digger had a bit of a rough go, didn't he? Took 30 men down with him. Things got a bit touchy during a cave-in, and only old Digger makes it back topside.
You know the mine was closed right after that?
Yes. Should have been closed before. It was already worked out.
Well, perhaps not, Digger. They've opened it up again.
They've what?
I received a letter from Sandy McGregor. You remember him.
Sandy? Sure.
Now, look. He'd gotten some backing somewhere. Found tracings of another vein, most likely. Well, anyway, he asked me to look you up. He wants you to come back. And seeing you like this, well, naturally, I think you should.
No, 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 I couldn't. Not to Tabora.
Well, what happened wasn't your fault, man.
I know it, but no one else does.
Well, Sandy Mustry wouldn't have made you a firm offer.
How much?
5,000.
Five?
Well, why not? There's no other engineer in the union knows that mine as well as you do.
Know it like my belly.
And you've had experience with the natives up there, too.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, nothing really, but... Well, after the cave-in, when they decided it'd be too dangerous to recover those bodies, the natives put some, sort of a silly taboo on the mine.
Hmm. 5,000, eh?
That's right. Now, What do you say, Digger?
I say no.
Oh, but good heavens, man, you...
Carton, I have nightmares. I see those men trapped down there waiting for me, expecting me to come back, and lead them out.
You won't get rid of your dreams in this pest hole, Digger. Believe me, it'll help to go back. And if things don't work out, man, you...
Well, it's about time. Where's the drink?
Mister, say no more without money and what you owe.
Well, now imagine that, Carton. And I only owe the few lousy quid. Imagine that, will you?
Digger, I purchased a truck for McGregor. Now, someone's got to drive it up for him. Now, if you like, I can have it at the river crossing tomorrow morning.
I don't know.
I'll get you out of here. Maybe your last chance.
It would be better.
What?
It would be better for you to go back to this place.
Oh, you've been listening.
Seems she cares more about you than you do for yourself.
Dio buona. It's true.
Well, let me have your answer, Digger. It's been already 2 weeks since he asked me to find you. Now, you won't wait forever.
2 weeks? You started looking for me just 2 weeks ago.
Well, that's quite a while to wait when you're anxious to get into production. I know he won't wait much longer. Now, what do you say?
This woman would make a fine fortune teller. You buy me out of here and I'll go.
It was normally a pleasant 3-day trip to Tabora. But for the Digger, his liquor supply suddenly cut off. It was a nightmare. Twice he had to stop for several hours while he fought to control his nerves. But by the time he finally reached the floor of the valley that led to Tabora, the worst was over. Late the fourth afternoon, remembering what Carton had said, he swung the truck wide around the native village. Then a few minutes later, he was driving down the hot, dusty street that separated the four frame buildings of the Tabora mine.
Hello, anybody here? Sandy McGregor.
Who is it? It's the Digger.
Why, what's the matter? Didn't you recognize me?
Look now, of course I did. I just had to wait till I got close up.
You haven't changed, Sandy.
Neither have you. And I'm very glad to see you, Digger. Oh, is that the truck Carton bought me?
Yes, and she's loaded with supplies. Carton thinks you've found a new vein.
So I have. Should go about 600 a ton. I've got some more samples. You take a look, see what you think. Are your leg been giving you trouble?
Oh, no. Muscles get tight when I don't use it. That's all.
Too bad you didn't get entirely clear that day. But even so, you're a great deal better off than the others who were down there.
Yes. Anyone else here with you?
The geologist seems to know his job. Oh, here we are. Clark, this is Fabian. Roger Fabian.
Clark?
That's right. I was just about to fix myself a drink. You'll join me, won't you?
No, thanks.
Oh, come now, Fabian. Surely you're thirsty after your long trip?
No. I've decided to stay off it for a while.
Oh? Think you'll be able to?
Why, yes. Why?
I've always heard once the stuff's gotten hold of a man, it took real guts to leave it alone.
Oh.
Well, how about you, Sandy?
No, not now. I'm going to take another look around for Miggy. Miggy's our newest recruit in the village, Digger.
Oh.
He disappeared right after luncheon today.
Carton said you were having some trouble with the natives.
Well, nothing to it except threats. They don't want us going down into the mine. Big taboo. I'll be back in a few minutes.
So you're the famous Digger. I've heard a lot about you.
Oh, from Sandy?
No, he scarcely mentioned you. Sure you want to have that drink?
Quite sure.
Well, you've changed since Joburg.
Oh? Did we meet there?
Oh, we had a mutual friend, Trudy Morgan. Remember her?
Oh, yes.
You've been gone about a month when I checked in. Well, did you like to see your room? It's right across the hall from mine. Doesn't matter if you snore, though. Rats keep me awake most of the night anyway.
Rats here?
Well, the place is overrun with them. And they're hungry, so watch yourself. Well, everything seems to be in order. Except the lock on this door.
No, I won't worry about that.
I would. Someone might sneak in while you're sleeping and slit your throat.
Well, that's not very funny, Clark.
It wasn't meant to be. Now, come along. We'd better get your gear in before dark. That's all you have?
All I brought with me.
Hello. I wonder what they're up to.
Clark, Digger.
Over here, Sandy.
You find him?
No, he's gone back to the village.
Well, looks as if I'll have to don the apron tonight.
We'll not be eaten here.
Oh, why not?
I went over toward the village. That's no ordinary ceremony they're holding. They're being whipped up into something big. Lots of kula being passed about.
For our benefit, perhaps?
I'm afraid so.
You mean they might come here to attack us?
I'm not going to stay to find out.
Where we go?
Down into the mine. That's the one place they won't dare to come after us. Now, you and Clark go ahead, Digger. I'll get some blankets and things from the house.
Well, what about the truck and your supplies?
If we don't get out of this alive, we won't need them.
Oh, Digger, I wasn't going to tell you this before you got settled.
Yes?
I've taken an oath to kill you.
What?
I intend to do it within the next few days. Unless, of course, the natives do it for me. Well, come along, Digger.
By taking advantage of the Digger's bad leg, Clark managed to stay several paces in front of him as they walked toward the mine. This prevented Fabian from asking questions and pressing Clark for answers. Clark himself was the big question. The Digger was not entirely convinced that Clark was serious, yet there was nothing humorous in Clark's threat, which had been made in an unemotional, completely fatalistic way. He was still undecided when McGregor caught up with him. Together, they reached the hoist and climbed into the cage. The moment before they started down, they saw the native set fire to the building they had just left. Then they lowered themselves. And the Digger began to remember the nightmares and remembered this mine was also a tomb.
This'll set us back.
Set us back more if they catch us.
Hmm. Here, there's a bottle wrapped in that blanket, Clark. Will you break it out?
Yeah?
Yes.
How far are we going down, Sandy?
To the lower level.
The lower level?
Mm. Yeah, that's what I've been working. I've got a spot fixed up back near the cave-in.
You look a bit shaky, Digger. Better take some of this.
Yes, all right, thanks.
There, that's more like the old Digger. How about you, Sandy?
Go ahead.
No, it won't bother me being down there.
Well, it shouldn't bother any of us.
That's so? How about it, Digger? Would it bring back some nasty memories?
Why should it?
Well, last time you were down, you barely got out alive. You were lucky that day, weren't you?
Clark,
Oh, you're right, Sandy. I'm sorry, Digger. Didn't mean to remind you.
You didn't?
No, don't imagine I did. Here, you better take another drink. Wash away the ghosts.
Well, better do.
You hang on to that bottle, Digger. I'll help Sandy with the other things.
Wait a minute.
What is it?
I'm not sure.
It's smoke.
What?
It is smoke. Coming from up top.
They're trying to smoke us out.
Yeah, well, that'll take a lot of doing. Come on, let's get back where we can rest.
They started back then, their graphite lamps lighting the way, casting shadows on the stone walls ahead of them. The Digger remembered each foot of the level, each beam that supported it and kept the earth from caving in on them. Once he would have remembered them as old friends, but not now. Then they rounded a sharp turn and came upon the fallen tons of shale and loose rock that had caused the death of 30 men.
Did you see that, Clark?
Yes.
What was it?
A rat. Filthy little rat.
Digger, you'd better go easy on that stuff.
Let him alone, Sandy.
You let him alone. You're the one's been after him.
It's all right, Sandy. Don't you worry about me.
Come on, let me have the bottle, Digger.
Yes, sure. Here you are.
Thank you.
Digger, did you know all the men that were in here that day?
No, not all.
But most of them?
Yes.
I saw a letter you wrote to the wife of one of them after it happened.
I wrote a good many letters.
Yes. This woman lived in Suffolk. Has two kids.
No.
At about 11 and 14 now. You know who I mean, Digger?
No, I don't know. Well, was she Henry's wife? Yes, I wrote to tell her to try explain how it happened.
And how you managed to get out when no one else did. She believed you, but I didn't.
Why?
Now, wait a minute, Clark.
You wait. I've been looking for him for over 6 months. I'd almost given up.
Why, Clark? Why?
Don't you know? Has your brain rotted that much?
What?
Can't you remember his last name?
No.
Henry's last name. He was your friend.
No, I don't.
You sent his things back to her.
I sent them too. No.
No, you can't be...
Clark. Henry Clark, Digger.
No, I...
You're Henry's brother?
That's right.
Why did he tell me?
It didn't matter to you. No. Why did you lie to her like that, Digger?
I didn't lie.
You lied.
No, I didn't.
Then and at the inquest.
Now, stop it, Clark. He was cleared at the inquest.
Because there wasn't anyone to testify against him. Oh. But there is now. And he's right here, sitting beside me. You remember Trudy, don't you, Digger? The woman in Joburg?
Yes.
She told me about you. Yes. All about you. You have nightmares. The same one, over and over.
Clark, please.
Trudy told me she used to come into your room when it was at its worst. You'd be yelling, should have warned them.
No.
Why didn't I warn them?
Clark.
And while you were saying it, you'd throw your arms and legs about as if you were fighting your way through hell.
Now, Clark, even if it is true, why not forget it?
I'll forget it when he can sit here on my brother's tomb with a clear conscience.
Oh.
Without being sick afraid like he's been since we entered this place. You know what he's afraid of, Sandy? Of the men buried here.
No.
Isn't that right, Digger?
No.
Isn't that right?
Yes. Yes.
And you're afraid of them because you ran. You left them behind.
Yes.
You saw the danger signs. You knew it was going to give way.
Yes.
But instead of taking time to warn them, you ran.
Yes.
Isn't that true?
Yes.
Isn't it true?
Yes, it's all true. Yes.
Okay.
I've known you a long time, Digger. I've seen you do things that took more than I had in me.
I couldn't help it. Believe me, I couldn't help it. Cave-in's the only thing that I've ever been afraid of in my life. Fire, explosions, gas. Yes, I was afraid of them. But not like a cave-in, where I'd be crushed to death or die fighting for air. Please, Clark, I couldn't help it. Believe me,
No, it's all right, Digger.
You speak for yourself, McGregor.
Oh, now, Clark, you're not going to keep after him.
You want me to shake his hand? Show him the meaning of brotherly love, that it?
There'll be no harm in it. And a lot of good for both of you.
You go to...
We may all do just that if they keep on pouring smoke in here.
They sat quietly for a while, waiting. And then, just as McGregor had feared it would, the smoke reached their level and came rolling down the shaft. And with it, running in front of it, were all the animals who had made their nests in the abandoned mine.
What time is it?
About 4.
It'll be daylight in another hour. The natives will stop then. Go home to sleep off the cooler.
What was that?
Did he hear something?
I don't know. I thought... Listen.
Another rat.
Look. Look there. At the turn. There were 4 of them.
Listen to them. They must be coming down here to get away from the smoke up top.
Let's take a look out toward the cage.
Good Lord.
Hundreds of them.
Keep your lamp on them. They're afraid of light.
Sandy. Look back there toward the cage.
More coming in.
They're not moving. Come on, we'll get back.
What?
We'll go back where we were. Come on.
You're going to have us trapped in here, Sandy. We're going to be cut off from the cage. We've got to make a run for it now.
Take it easy, Clark.
Take it easy. There are 1,000 rats out there waiting for us. How are we going to get out?
I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about keeping alive right where we are.
Look. Look.
They're moving this way, Sandy.
We've got to make a run for it.
We can't run.
You mean he can't run?
I mean we're sticking together.
Then none of us will make it. We'll all die here.
Shut up, Clark.
We'll make a nice meal for them. For their families and their families.
Shut up!
Sandy. You two had better go now, while there's still a chance.
No, we'll stay. The air should begin to clear in another hour.
How do you know? You don't know for sure the natives are going to give up?
Sandy, your only chance is to try and reach the cage. If you make it and it's clear up top, send the cage back down. I'll try for it then. If it's not clear up there, it won't make any difference anyhow.
Stop talking and let's move.
But if we leave you alone, Digger, they might...
They will anyway, in a few moments. Go on, Sandy. Go on. There's a shovel over there, and I can hold off until you get up top.
Listen to him, Sandy. Do what he says.
All right. We'll try.
Go on, Sandy. Oh, Sandy.
Yes?
One thing. In case you get through and I don't, there's a woman I'd like her to have my things. Will you send them to Carton? He'll know where to take them.
Yes. Good luck, Digger.
Turn on your dirty little beast. Get out of there.
A few minutes later, Clark and Sandy McGregor, having fought their way to the cage, reached the top of the mine and stepped out into a clear blue dawn. Then, with an almost automatic gesture, because they had said they would, and not because they expected the crippled Digger to make it through the rats,
They sent the cage back down. Then they waited.
How long's it been?
Long enough.
Yes.
Clark. Clark, he made it. He made it! Come on, help me pull him up.
They looked down the shaft, and as the cage neared them, they could see rats clinging to the top of it and to the ropes on each side. Then the cage was clear, and they saw what it carried.
No. Oh, my God. No.
Look at him. They must have been all over him. For 1,000 feet.
They buried him as the sun rose full above the horizon. A few days later, Sandy wrote another letter to his friend Carton. The day after receiving it, Carton drove again to the river crossing, parked his car, and crossed into the native section. Before he reached Winky's, where he was to give the woman a very small package, he had been pushed, cursed, and spat upon.
Suspense, in which Torrin Thatcher starred in tonight's presentation of The Digger.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 9th, 1956 on CBS. Closing out this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.